Well, good morning, Friendship. I hope you've had a great week, and we're ready to kick off another one. We're starting a brand new series today entitled Huge Mistakes Every Parent Makes. Now, I know some of you are like, yeah, we had kids. No, that's not the mistake we're talking about. We're talking about things that we do, and we do them usually because we love our kids. And so we tend to do things or overdo things, and it creates some issues, and we're going to talk about that for the next several weeks. Today, we're talking about pain-free. We want our kids to have a pain-free childhood, right? We don't want them to experience pain. Next week, we're going to talk about problem-free. We don't want our kids to grapple with the difficulties of problems. And then we're talking about permanently fixed. In other words, we want to fix stuff in their lives so that they never have to deal with it again. And then, of course, the perfect future that we want to give our kids. So I want to begin this morning. I want to hear from all the parents that are here this morning. So if you're a parent, let me hear from you. All right, not bad. You guys are awake. You guys are ready. You're like, all right, let's fix these kids. Okay, so now for those of you that are non-parents, okay, whether you're kids or you're adults that don't have any kids or whatever, I want to just challenge you. This is not a totally just parent series. There are stuff you're going to be able to learn absolutely every week. And today, we're going to be talking about some things maybe that you didn't learn as a kid that now as you're an adult or you're getting to be an adult, you need to learn. And so there's some things that we'll be talking about today that you need to be able to put to practice in your life so that when you do have kids or if you do have kids, you can help them get it too. But really more importantly for you right now in the stage of life that you're in, to be able to learn these things that we're going to be talking about for the next 4 weeks as well. So we challenge you with that to be able to engage and to be able to do that. Now, as parents, there's all sorts of things that we do. There's all sorts of things that we engage in. There's all sorts of things that we're trying to help our kids with. And so really this series is not about being a perfect parent or how to become a perfect parent. It's really just simply some things that we do out of love usually or out of a desire of protection that is actually working against our kids becoming all that God has called them to be. And so today we're going to begin simply talking about pain. Now, there are very few people in the world that enjoy pain. We had in our first service, and they're, you know, 9:30 people, they like getting up early. They also ran the mini marathon. Anyone here running the mini marathon this weekend? Okay, see, my 11 o'clock people, man, you're like, yes, no marathon business. That's, you know, but they love pain. I mean, they run out and they run and they run and they run. I'm like, I don't get it. And, you know, I told them this morning, I'm like, listen, you know, the only time I'm going to run is if something's chasing me. And I'm only going to run as long as I can outrun the slowest person because that's all I got to do. And then I'm fine. But, you know, some of it's just you enjoy pain. It's something that you do. That's very rare. You've probably been dropped on your head as a child or something like that. But, you know, even as I think about it and as I process through it, pain is something that's a natural part of life. It's really not something that we can avoid. Pain's just a natural part of the process of life. It's something that we've got to learn to deal with. And if as parents we shield our kids or keep our kids from experiencing pain, they never learn how to deal with it. They never learn how to process it. And really, that's the big idea for today, is that pain is not a problem to be avoided. Pain is not a problem to be avoided, but it's a process that needs to be navigated. Pain is not a problem that needs to be avoided, but a process that needs to be navigated. You see, pain is something that we all, you know, naturally cringe or recoil from, but yet pain is something that can really teach us some profound truths. Pain is something that can encourage us and challenge us and help us grow and be all that God has called us to be. In fact, I wrote a few things down here I'm just going to share with you that we understand why pain is really works on behalf for us in our life. Pain can be a powerful teacher. Pain can be a powerful teacher. Do you remember when you were a little kid, and maybe those of you that are my age or older, maybe it's a little more difficult to remember, but when you were a little kid, how amazing the light socket was. Do you remember that? Those of you that have little kids now, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, they see mom walk over and plug this curling iron in, and a short while later, she's got curly hair. It's like, wow, the electric socket did that. You know, Dad goes over and he plugs in his electric razor and he gets rid of the Grizzly Adam thing. It's like, whoa. And then you go to the kitchen, you plug in the toaster and you put toast in and toast comes out and you put peanut butter and Nutella on it. It's like, whoa, everything gets better when it's stuck into the outlet. And so as a child, your mind goes, I could be better when I'm plugged into the outlet. And if you were successful, you recognized pain, especially if you did like, you know, and then stuck your finger in there. It's like, whoa, that did not make me feel better. In fact, I've got an arrhythmia or something going on now. And that pain taught you that this is not a good idea. Pain taught you that you don't stick your finger in that. You don't stick your tongue in that. You don't hold on to that while you're also rinsing out a cup. I mean, you just don't do these things because pain is a powerful teacher. Pain can also be a significant motivator. When you're a little bit older and you were in your room and your parent walked into your room and every article of clothing you ever owned was on the floor, along with every toy that you ever had and every video game and your cell phone that they paid $600 for and are paying $80 a month for is on the phone, cracked in a life-proof case that the person that told them it would never break, but it did. And you were the exception to the rule. And they said, listen, here's the deal. You've got an hour. If this room is not clean in an hour, you're grounded. And you wanted to go to prom, or you wanted to go to do this, or you wanted to do that. And so you began to clean your room because you knew the pain was a motivator to get that done. Now, if you were probably like me and you were more stubborn, you took it and you like put everything in the closet and closed the door and hoped that they didn't look there, but your parents aren't stupid. So they opened the door and they found that, and pain ensued because, you know, it's like, hey, and so pain can be a powerful teacher. It can also be a significant motivator, but it also can be a signal that something's wrong. Something's wrong. I played sports all through high school and college, and as I got into my 30s, I played soccer here at the Gathering Place, and in my late 30s, I was playing just you know, pick-up league. Of course, everyone gets real serious at that point in time. But I was on the field, which is really a bad thing for me because I had to be running, which, again, you know, I hate running. I played, by the way, as a goalkeeper, so I didn't have to run when I was in college. But I was running on the field. They have this really cool thing that's set up there at the Gathering Place. They can do concerts and stuff, but they've got these 4-foot by 4-foot AstroTurf pieces that interlock. And so when they do a concert, they take it all up and they put it in, they lock it back together. Well, as I was running down the field, and again, I'm not a good runner, I hit one of those seams. Well, the problem is they had just had a concert the night before and that seam was not completely locked. And so the AstroTurf slid and my knee did this. It was awesome. And let me tell you something. There was pain because something was wrong. Knees aren't supposed to go like that. They go like this, and they don't go like this, and it went like this and did a little bend. And everyone in the entire place knew that there was something wrong because I had expressed my pain as it happened. And it was not exciting. It was painful. And that was the point in time I realized, you're too old to be doing this anymore. So I stopped, and pain was an indicator that something was wrong. Not that just my knee was bad, but you're too old. So pain can be a powerful teacher, a significant motivator. It can be a signal that something's wrong. And potential pain can be a tremendous deterrent to bad decisions. Any of you ever been bit by a dog? Okay, cool. How many of you were bit by a dog that when you were younger you thought was cute and a puppy and everything like that, and all of a sudden that dog turned on you? Yeah, right? Okay, because you think it's cute. As you got older, you began to think back, and you realized that dog was not so much cute. It wasn't smiling at you. It was baring its teeth at you. And as you get older and you go and you start walking down, you look at a dog, and if a dog is smiling at you, you recognize that, and you go, oh, potential pain is on its way if I make the bad decision of trying to pet that dog. And so you avoid that bad decision. Pain, or the potential pain, can be an incredible help in not making a bad decision. Pain is a very profitable thing in our world. Pain is something that can teach us if we allow it. But here's the thing. Because we're parents and because we love our kids, we tend to shield them from pain. And because we shield them from pain, sometimes our kids don't learn what they need to learn because we've shielded them from the pain. James is the half-brother of Jesus Christ, and he writes in the book of James, James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. And I want to just for a moment, because I think this is really, really important to remember. James is the half-brother of Jesus Christ. Half-brother because Jesus, his father was God the Father, and Mary, and so Jesus had the father, was God, right? Well, James is the son of Joseph and Mary. And James grew up as the younger brother of Jesus Christ. Can you imagine growing up as the younger brother of Jesus Christ? He never sinned. He was always obedient. Not only did he never do the wrong thing, he always did the right thing. How many times did James hear from his mother Mary growing up, "Why can't you just be more like Jesus?" Can you imagine that? And so James, his whole life gets this. And I love he writes in James chapter 1, his first book he's writing, he accepts Jesus Christ later on after Jesus is resurrected from the dead because he recognizes him as God. You know, and all this stuff, this miraculous transformation. He becomes one of the leaders of the early church, and he writes in James chapter 1 this. He says, "Listen, my friends, be glad if you have a lot of trouble." You go, was he dropped on his head? As a child, why in the world would you be glad to have trouble? Well, it's very important to understand what James is saying. He says, listen, be glad, be joyful when trouble comes into your life because you know that you learn to endure by having your faith tested. He says, it's not like you're excited because pain comes into your life, like, oh, more pain. No, it's because there's something in the end that is profitable because of the pain. He says, when pain comes into your life, it teaches you how to man up. When pain comes into your life, it teaches you how to grit your teeth and keep going forward. When pain comes into your life, it teaches you how to grow stronger, how to do the things that you're supposed to do, how to make sure you make the commitments and keep the commitments and keep those promises, even when it's difficult. And specifically, he talks about your faith and your spiritual life. He says, when you get spiritually stronger is when difficulties come into your life. Do you realize that God sometimes allows hard things and painful things to enter into your life for the purpose of making you stronger? You go, well, I don't know that I like that. I understand it. I get it. That's like me when I used to go to the gym. I don't anymore. It's been a while. But those of you that like going to the gym, I rarely see people walking around smiling at the gym. Have you noticed this? People go to the gym all the time. I mean, even the guys are like, you know, walking around like this, even though they don't need to walk around like that, but they walk around like that. They're over there and they're lifting weights. And they're dripping with sweat. They're like, snarling and all that stuff. Nobody is enjoying the process, but they want what comes out of it, right? And so that's what James is saying. He's saying, listen, we understand that pain is not fun, but pain is a process that's going to create something in your life. Pain is something that when you go through it, it makes you stronger, it gives you strength. And then James finishes, he says, but you must learn to endure everything, everything. You have to understand that there's going to be difficulties in every area of your life, physical, relational, spiritual, emotional. You're going to have difficulties in life, in painful situations, and you must learn to endure everything so that you will be completely mature and not lacking in anything. Now, this is really interesting when we talk about our kids, because we all want our kids to mature. We all want our kids to grow up. I honestly, and this is me talking, this is my own side note here, footnote if you will, I honestly believe a lot of the problems that we're seeing in our world today, that we're seeing on our college campuses today, is because there's been a couple of generations in a row of kids that have never experienced pain. They've never experienced how to deal with it. They've never experienced how to work through it. And so they've never matured. You probably know people that are in their 30s who act like they're in their threes. I guess act like they're three. I guess there's not a group of threes, but in their threes. They pitch fits when things don't go their way. You probably know people who have kids who act more like the kids than the kids act. I know people that are my age. 45 years old, Me and Adam Vinatieri, we're 45 years old, both of us. And yet there are people our age who act like they're still in high school. You go, really? Yeah, just look at Facebook. It's filled with them. And you go, what? What's going on? They've never learned from the process of pain, and they've never matured. You see, guys, if you want your kids to become what God has called them and created them and crafted them to be, you've got to allow a little pain to come into their life. So this morning, I want to just share with you three mistakes that we make when it comes to pain, okay? Three mistakes that we make when it comes to pain. First mistake, we remove consequences. We remove consequences. Our kids make decisions, they make choices. And with every choice, there's a consequence. You cannot make a choice and there not be a consequence, okay? So let's just be real about this. Consequences we always think is positive or negative. Negative, right? Consequences can be positive, though, can't they? It's just a result. Choices always have a result. There's always a consequence. And when we talk about removing the consequence, we as parents, because we think we're being loving, shield our children from the negative and bad and painful consequences of the choices that they make. They make a bad decision, and we know that consequences are coming. For example, okay, your child doesn't study for a test. They go in, they fail. And instead of allowing them to accept that grade and going, hey, that's what happens. When you don't study, you fail. We call the teacher because it has to be the teacher's fault, right? Now, it may be the teacher's fault. Let's just be honest. There's some bad teachers out there, just like there's great teachers out there. And there's average teachers out there. We all have different abilities. We all do different things. But the reality is if there's 30 kids in the class and your kid's the only one that failed, probably not the teacher. And yet, we go in and we want to attack the teacher and we want to get the grade changed, we want to get the grade fixed, we want to put it on a scale because it couldn't be our child. We have removed the consequence. They don't experience the consequence. I want you to see this, folks, because this is really important. Proverbs chapter 19, verses 18 to 19. It begins with this: discipline your children while there is hope. Now, immediately, you hear discipline and you think spanking and grounding, and that's not what the word means. Discipline is training. Training. You are training your children. You are teaching them. You're guiding them. And he finishes it with, while there is still hope. That is very ominous, is it not? Train them while there's still a chance. And then he gives us the reason why. So train them while there's still a chance. Otherwise, you will what? Otherwise, you will ruin their lives. Do you realize that when you remove the consequences from your children, you are setting them up for a life filled with failure because they'll never learn? Notice what it says. It says, a hot-tempered man or hot-tempered people must pay the penalty. If you rescue them once, you will have to do it again. And again, and again, and again, and again. See, moms and dads, if you remove the consequence from your children's actions and your children's decisions, you are literally setting them up for failure after failure after failure. You are always going to feel like you have to step in. You have a 35-year-old adult male or an adult female in your house that keeps making bad decisions or that lives outside your house and keeps making bad decisions, and you keep bailing them out. Eventually, if they haven't figured it out already, they're going to figure out, I can make any stupid decision I want because mom and dad are always going to bail me out. And they don't ever bear the consequences of the decisions that they make. And you've set them up and you've literally ruined their lives. Now, again, I don't think any parent does this with the intention of ruining your child's life. Nobody does that. We do it because we think it's loving. We think we're protecting them. But what we're actually doing is setting them up for defeat because we remove the consequences. The second mistake we make is that we prioritize their happiness. We prioritize their happiness. Because of what I do, when I drive past churches, I always look at them. You know, most people drive by churches and probably don't pay any attention. When I drive by church buildings, I always look at them. I look at what they're doing. I look at their signs. I look at everything. And there's one particular church. Don't ask me where it is. I'm not going to tell you. There's one particular church that when I drive by, when I get close to where I'm driving by, I'm like, okay, Lord, please just don't let it be heretical today. Just don't let it be hypocrisy and, you know, lies from hell. Because it's so bad. So often, like, not just like the really bad puns, like if you don't sit in church, you're gonna, you know, smell your own pew. No, I mean like really, really bad stuff. And about 2-3 months ago, I drove by and it literally said, God's highest goal is your happiness. And I thought to myself, God's doing a sucky job. Think about that. If that's true, man, he really doesn't know what he's doing. You see, the truth of the matter is God's goal is not your happiness. Now, happiness is not a bad thing, right? It's a good thing. It's something that we enjoy on a regular basis. But happiness is based on happenings, things that happen to us in life. And if things go well, we're happy. But if happens, something happens that's bad, then our happiness also goes away. It's based on circumstances. Now, there's nothing wrong with happiness. It's a good thing. It's something that we should embrace. But if we make our children's happiness the priority, if we continue to manipulate circumstances so that it always turns out in their favor, such as always letting them win the board game, such as them never experiencing, you know, failure at any point in kind, if we always do that, then here's what we're doing. We have robbed them from experiencing God's perfect provision, and we have robbed them from learning patience and endurance, and we've robbed them from the joy of fighting through something and coming out the other end victorious. We've totally ripped that from them. If we prioritize their happiness. But here's another dangerous thing that we do. If we prioritize their happiness, we are assuming that what they want is what's best for them. Now think about that for a second. We are literally saying our 7-year-old child, their mind is advanced enough that they know what's best for them. Oh, you know that's not true. You know it's not true. Do you remember what it was like when you were 7? You're like, oh, I want this and I want that, I want that. And we have literally set up this mindset that no matter what happens, they can always get it, they can always have it, they can always achieve it. And we're giving them a warped view of reality. We're rewarding behavior that in the real world would not result in a favorable outcome. For example, working with your kid at math. We had many struggles in our household when our girls were younger, working with math. Everyone loves math. It's great. 1 + 1 equals what? Does it ever equal 7? Somebody be like, oh, yes, it does. No, it never equals 7. 1 + 1 always equals 2. In this reality and every other reality, 1 + 1 always equals 2. But you're sitting with your kid and you say, 1 + 1 equals what, Johnny? 7. Here's a Jolly Rancher. You tried hard. You've just rewarded wrong. You've rewarded untruth. You're like, well, yeah, but he tried hard. Okay. When's the last time you were rewarded at your job for trying hard and doing the wrong thing? Well, Billy, or William, we'll go. William, you're older now. William, you were supposed to arrange the annual report. Well, yeah, I did that spreadsheet, though. It's a beautiful spreadsheet, but it's not, and it doesn't have anything to do with the annual report. Well, listen, I worked really hard on that spreadsheet, but it's the wrong thing. Well, yeah, but I worked hard. You're fired. That's real world, isn't it? Now, should we encourage effort? Absolutely, we should encourage effort. You try hard, you do your best, but in reality, you do not reward when you don't accomplish. That's just the way that it works. That's the way that the real world is. If you manipulate their world around them to make them think that as long as they just try hard, everything will work out, guess what? There's a whole bunch of people in the world that try hard but don't accomplish anything and end up penniless and homeless and without hope because mom and dad said as long as you try hard, that's enough. It's not. You got to figure out what they're good at. We'll talk about that in a few weeks. Like, well, how do you know what you're good at? Do you know how you figure out what you're good at? By doing a whole bunch of things that you're not good at. But you never know that you're not good at it if you're never allowed to experience pain. You see, pain is an incredible teacher and motivator that directs us in the right way. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 15. It begins with this, correct your children. Now pause for a second because immediately you see the word correct and your mind translates it to discipline, spanking, you know, grounding. No, that's not what it means. To correct means to take them and move them to the right path. It's a course correction. So literally the writer of Proverbs is saying, listen, point your kids in the right direction. Don't let them go down a path that's wrong. Correct them. Get them going in the right path. Correct them and they will be wise. Wisdom is knowledge that you can apply to your life. It's applied knowledge. It doesn't mean you're going to be brilliant. It just means that you're wise. There's a lot of, my grandfather was one of the wisest men that I have ever met or read or anything in my life. He had a fourth grade education. He was not what you would call intelligent, but he was wise. You see, wisdom isn't so much about smarts as it is about the ability to make good decisions based upon the information that you have. And that's what it means to correct your children, to put them down the right path so that when they are older, they will be wise and make good decisions. And then it ends with this. Children out of control disgrace their mothers. We see that every day in every supermarket across the United States, don't we? You've witnessed that. The kid freaking out, throwing a fit. Their mom's just like, listen, just take the motorcycle. I don't care. Just buy the toy. Get it over with. Because children are out of control. And here's the sad part. Children grow up. And if they've never learned, they've never been taught, and you as a mom and you as a dad continue to prioritize their happiness. When they're out of your home, they're going to think that that's what everyone else's job is too, to make them happy. And you've set them up. Even though your intention was good, the unintended consequences, you've set them up for failure. The third mistake we make when it comes to pain is this. We minimize their exposure. We minimize their exposure. The word that I like to use here when I think about this is sheltering them. We want to shelter them from pain, right? Now, there's certain truth and necessity to that dependent upon their age, okay? You don't like, well, Johnny, let's talk about death. And it's like, you know, an 18-month-old. It doesn't work that way. You know, there's a certain connection with the maturity of the child and the situation that you deal with. But as they grow, if you continue to minimize their exposure, they won't grow. They won't grow internally in their thought process. They won't grow emotionally in how to handle things. They won't grow spiritually in seeing God provide. You see, God has a very different approach when it comes to limiting your child's exposure. God really wants us to share with our children what we're going through. Now again, appropriate to the age, but he wants us to share what's going on in our life what we went through. Talk about what you see going on in the world around you, in the lives of those around you, and recognize the pain and the reason behind that pain and how it got to that point. Help them navigate through that so that when they experience it on their own and they're not there, then you're not there, they can begin to process it through your life. Because here's a stark truth: they're not always going to be at home. Someday they're going to be out of your house, and you're not going to be there, and they're going to have to figure it out on their own. It'd be a whole lot better while they're in the protection of your household and the safety of your home for them to learn how to process through this instead of hoping to figure it out later on. This idea of keeping them sheltered from this really gets them in issues, because at some point in time, the shelter is going to be removed and they're going to be out there by themselves. And if they've not built up the strength, it's going to crush them. God was talking to Moses in the book of Exodus, and he was laying out what he was going to do to the nation of Egypt, because the nation of Egypt had enslaved his children, the children of Israel. And he said, Moses, I'm going to send these plagues. I'm going to do all these things because they have done these horrible things to you and to your nation. And in the midst of explaining it, God gives one of his reasons why. And it's really profound, because we think that, right, God's about the big picture and God's this. And he goes, listen, I want you to understand one of the reasons I'm doing this. I want you to see this. The Lord said to Moses, go to the king of Egypt. I have made him and his officers stubborn so that I could show them my powerful miracles. I also did this so that you could tell your children and your grandchildren how I was hard on the Egyptians. Tell them about the miracles I did among them so that all of you will know that I am the Lord. He goes, I want you, when your kids see this, I want you to sit them down and go, let me tell you why this is happening. Let me tell you why this pain has entered into these people's lives. Let me tell you why we're having to do the things that we're doing. Let me tell you and explain with you why this is such a difficult time in our lives. And what's one of the things that we as a family have always done, and I truly believe, growing up in a pastor's home and now being a pastor with kids in our home, I truly believe this is one of the reasons our girls still actually like church. Because if you're a pastor, all your problems, guess what? It's in the church. It's with people who are in the church. And so they go, what's wrong? And you're like, well, let's talk about it. Now you don't go, well, Sally, no. You go through the big picture. And you go, well, here's what's happening. Somebody was ugly and somebody said this and somebody did that. And why would somebody do that? You know, I don't know why people are nuts. I really don't. Why would somebody say that? Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe their mom said that their happiness was the most important thing when they were kids. But we're not going to do that. We're going to walk through this with you. And so there's this process that begins to happen. And they begin to understand. They begin to work through it. And that gives them faith of their own. And here's the cool part. If they're walking through at least bits and parts of the pain with you, or seeing the pain that's going on in others' lives, then when God provides, they see God show up. And they see God begin to work. And they see God begin to process. I know as parents, probably the last thing you want to do is when your kids get older is share how stupid you were when you were young. But here's the thing. That may be the most powerful teaching moment that you have, is to say, let me tell you why this is a bad idea. Because I did it. And here's what happened. And although God can redeem it, and God can change it, and God can heal it, I don't want you to have to go through that pain that I went through. Let me tell you how painful that was. And they go, enough said. And they begin to navigate a path because you've corrected them down the right path. And they've understood what's going on. As a parent, man, we don't want to see our kids in pain. You cannot even express to other people the emotion, that you experience as a parent when your child is in pain. It is just gut-wrenching. And those of you that don't have kids, or those of you that are still kids, let me tell you something. When you do, you will finally go, oh, that's what they're talking about. It's awful. Breaks your heart. And it takes everything within you not to fix it all. But if you do, you're robbing your kids. You're not setting them up for success. Sometimes the most loving thing that you can do is to not remove the pain, but rather help them learn how to navigate through the process of pain with them. That doesn't make it quick. It doesn't make it easy. And I know some of you go, well, I can just do this and it's all over with. Yes, probably true. But they need to learn how to get there. They need to learn how to understand and navigate the process of pain successfully so that their lives are set up to receive and become all that God's called them to be. Father, we thank you so much. We thank you for pain. Although it's not something that we get excited about or we want, we thank you for it. God, we understand that pain is an inevitability in this life. And so God, I pray that every mom and dad that's sitting here this morning would make the commitment to teach their kids how to process through it, how to navigate through it. Because God, someday they're not going to be quote unquote our kid anymore. They're going to be somebody's husband, somebody's wife, somebody's worker, somebody's employee, somebody's dad, somebody's mom. God, this is a generational thing that we can step into with our children and change the balance and move it forward. Help us, God, to love our children enough to do the right thing in this moment. God, none of us are perfect. We thank you. We thank you for reminding us that even though we're not perfect, you are. You've paid for every pain. You have worked through every process. And God, you yourself allowed your son, Jesus Christ, to bear the pain of the cross so that we could have the freedom of life. Jesus, we thank you for being our great teacher, the example that we can follow. Father, we thank you for sending Jesus so that we could know which way to go. We pray this all in Jesus' name.